If you would pray with me, then we'll get right into the material. Our Father in heaven, we are grateful to you for this opportunity we have to be here tonight together to study from your word, and we pray that you would help us to glean from it the things that will help us to better understand your truth and to understand from the study of the divided kingdom just how horrific the consequences can be when we drift away from serving you and being faithful to you. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, I think everybody's aware that Ray was supposed to teach the class tonight, and he's home with COVID, and so he was going to teach on King Joash, king of Judah. So what I'm going to do tonight is we're going to do Joash, king of Judah, and Amaziah, king of Judah. So we got two kings to cover in one class period, so we're going to go pretty quick through this. To start, I'm just going to do some review. In 2 Kings chapter 9, Elisha anointed Jehu as king of Israel. You'll recall that. And God had instructed Elisha to do that. And when Jehu becomes king, he kills Joram, king of Israel, and Jezebel, Ahab's wife. And then he also kills Ahaziah, king of Judah, at the same time. And so then in chapter 11, 2 Kings chapter 11, Athaliah, when she hears that her son has been killed in battle, she seizes power. Do you recall how she does that? She eliminates some people. Who does she eliminate to do that?
Her grandson.
Her grandson. She kills her grandsons. With one exception. There's one grandson that she doesn't get to. King Ahaziah's sister, Josheba, who is also the wife of Jehoiada, the high priest at the time, they take Joash and hide him. He's just a baby. They hide him in their living quarters in the temple for 6 years. And then Jehoiada, the high priest, when Joash turns 7 years old, while he's living with them, he gives strict orders to the priests to guard Joash so that no harm would come to him. And then when he's 7 years old, he brings him out. He anoints him king, puts a crown on him. There's clapping, rejoicing. They're shouting, "Long live the king." They're blowing trumpets. And when Athaliah heard this, now Athaliah, you'll remember, is the daughter of Jezebel. And Athaliah introduced Baal worship into Judah. I mean, she's as wicked as her mother was. So when she heard this, she tore her clothes and she came out yelling, "Treason, treason," which to me is ironic. I mean, it's crazy. Who was the one who was actually guilty of treason? She was the one who was guilty of treason. So Jehoiada puts Athaliah to death, and then he makes a covenant between the Lord and the king, the new king, Joash. He makes a covenant between the Lord and the people. And the people tore down the altars of Baal. They tore down the images of Baal. And they killed the high priest of Baal. All this is happening, you know, on the same day. And so then Jehoiada, along with the guards, bring Joash from the temple. They bring him down and they put him on the throne. And so now Joash is the eighth king of Judah. And so that's where we're going to pick up in 2 Kings chapter 12. And so I'll be calling on some of you guys to read. Some of this we'll just have to review kind of quickly, and other parts of it we'll read. So 1 Kings chapter 12, in the seventh year of Jehu, Joash became king, and he reigned 40 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Zibiah of Beersheba. And Joash did right in the sight of God all his days in which Jehoiada, the priest, instructed him. Now, we're going to find out later in the study, as when we get into 2 Chronicles, that's very key right there. As long as Jehoiada was alive, Joash did what was right. But as soon as Jehoiada died, Joash goes south. And we'll look at that more as we go on. Okay, so verses 4 through 6. Could I get you to read those for us, Frank? 4 through 6.
And Jehoash said to the priest, all the money of the dedicated gifts that are brought into the house of the Lord, each man's census money, each man's assessment money, and all the money that a man purposes in his heart to bring into the house of the Lord. Let the priest take it themselves, each from his constituency, and let them repair the damages of the temple, wherever any dilapidation is found. Now it was so by the 23rd year of King Joash that the priest had not repaired the damages of the temple.
Okay, thank you. In 2 Chronicles 24, 4 through 7, it tells us there that Athaliah had robbed the holy things from the temple and had used the holy things from the temple of God. She'd used those things in worship to Baal. I mean, it's mind-blowing what Jezebel and Athaliah, some of the things that they did. And under her reign and the other two previous kings, the temple had fallen into a state of disrepair, and Joash wants to remedy that. He wants to repair it. And so he assigned the task to the priests, and they were collecting the money, and they were supposed to make the repairs, but they weren't doing it. And maybe, you know, I don't know exactly why. Maybe they were putting some of the money in their pockets, but it wasn't getting done. And so he calls them on the carpet for it. And so, Rick, can I get you to read 7 through 15?
And King Jehoash called for Jehoiada and the priest and for the other priests and said to them, why do you not repair the damages of the house? Now, therefore, take no more money from your acquaintances, but pay it for the damages of the house. So the priests agreed that they should take no more money from the people, nor repair the damages of the house. But Jehoiada the priest took a chest and bored a hole in its lid, and put it beside the altar on the right side as one comes into the house of the Lord. And the priest who guarded the threshold put in it all the money which was brought into the house of the Lord. And when they saw that there was much money in the chest, the king's scribe and the high priest came up and tied it in bags and counted the money which was found in the house of the Lord. And they gave the money which was weighed out into the hands of those who did the work, who had the oversight of the house of the Lord, and they paid it out to the carpenters and the builders who worked on the house of the Lord.
Hold on just a second, Rick. I'm sorry, for anybody who might have come in late, we're in 2 Kings chapter 12. 2 Kings chapter 12. Okay, go ahead. Thanks.
And to the masons and the stonecutters, and for buying timber and hewn stone to repair the damages to the house of the Lord, and for all that was laid out for the house to repair it. But there were not made for the house of the Lord silver cups, snuffers, bowls, trumpets, any vessels of gold or vessels of silver for the money which was brought into the house of the Lord. For they gave that to those who did the work, and with it they repaired the house of the Lord. Moreover, they did not require an accounting from the men into whose hand they gave the money to pay those who did the work, for they dealt faithfully.
Okay, thank you. So, Joash sees that this work is not getting done. He had asked them to do it, and some period of time, some years went by. I don't know how many years went by between the time he asked them to do this work and when he realized they weren't actually accomplishing the work. But he took the bull by the horns and he said, "Look, you guys we got to come up with a better way of doing this." So rather than just leaving it up to the priests, Jehoiada makes this box, and they're putting the money in the box, and the box gets full. They take the money out of the box and they pay the carpenters and the stone masons and the various craftsmen that are doing the work are getting paid directly, and the work gets accomplished. The work gets done. It says in verse 13 and 14 that there were certain things that weren't taken, that weren't done, the cups and the snuffers and the bowls and the vessels and so forth. But over in Second Chronicles, it actually says that once the construction part was completed, then those things were actually replaced. So Joash gets off to a good start here, doesn't he? He seems to have a zeal for the house of God, and he wants to do things right, and he's, you know, making sure that it's getting done and so forth. So off to a good start with him here. But then, let's read verse 17 and 18. And Zach, could I get you to read that, 17 and 18?
At that time, Hazael, king of Syria, went up and fought against Gath and took it. But when Hazael set his face to go against Jerusalem, Jehoash, king of Judah, took all the sacred gifts that Jehoshaphat and Jehoram and Ahaziah, his fathers, the kings of Judah, had dedicated, and his own sacred gifts, and all the gold that was found in the treasuries of the house of the Lord and of the king's house, and sent these to Hazael, king of Syria. Then Hazael went away from Jerusalem.
Okay, what's wrong with that picture right there? Yeah, he didn't petition God for help. If he had went to God with a sincere heart seeking help, I'm confident God would have helped him. But he's relying on his diplomacy. He's relying on his ability to pay off the man to keep him from attacking him. And that is not the way to do it. And this, all this does is put the king of Aram off for a time. We're going to see in 2 Chronicles 24, he comes back later. It's like a blackmailer. You don't ever satisfy a blackmailer. He's always going to come back. You don't ever satisfy a king that's holding you ransom. He's always going to want more and more and more and more. And such is the case here. So God sends prophets to Joash. Let's go over to 2 Chronicles now. 2 Chronicles chapter 24. And Les, could I get you to read 15 through 22, please? Second Chronicles 24, 15 through 22.
But Jehoiada grew old and was full of days, and he died. He was 130 years old when he died. And they buried him in the city of David among the kings, because he had done good in Israel, both toward God and his house. Now after the death of Jehoiada, the leaders of Judah came and bowed down to the king, and the king listened to them. Therefore they left the house of the Lord God of their fathers and served wooden images and idols. And wrath came upon Judah and Jerusalem because of their trespass. Yet he sent prophets to them to bring them back to the Lord, and they testified against them, but they would not listen. Then the Spirit of God came upon Zechariah, the son of Jehoiada the priest, who stood above the people and said to them, "Thus says God, why do you transgress the commandments of the Lord so that you cannot prosper? Because you have forsaken the Lord, he has also forsaken you." So they conspired against him, and at the command of the king they stoned him with stones in the court of the house of the Lord. Thus Joash the king did not remember the kindness which Jehoiada his father had done to him, but killed his son. And as he died, he said, "The Lord look upon it and repay."
We are seeing in this text that we're reading tonight, we're seeing some cold-hearted people. Athaliah murdering her own grandsons just so that she can take hold of the reins of power. Can you imagine murdering your grandchildren? And here we see Joash, who was shown mountains of kindness and benevolence and love and mentoring and assistance and aid by Jehoiada, the high priest, protected him for 6 years, anointed him king, put the crown on his head, took him and put him on the throne. Jehoiada did all of that for Joash. Soon as he's dead, these idolaters come in and influence Joash to leave God and start worshiping idols. So God sends prophets, and then he sends Zechariah, Jehoiada's son. You would think if he would respect anybody, he would respect Jehoiada's son. But they stone him to death. Over in Luke chapter 11, when Jesus is pronouncing woes against the Pharisees, in verse 50, he says this: "In order that the blood of all the prophets shed since the foundation of the world may be charged against this generation, from the blood of Abel to the blood of Zechariah, who perished between the altar of the house of God. Yes, I tell you, it shall be charged against this generation." Jesus references Zechariah's death. God does not forget those who die an honorable death in his service. Rick.
Well, it's interesting what Zechariah says as he's dying.
Yes. Exactly. What did he say? Go ahead.
"May the Lord avenge this death."
Yes.
Basically.
Yeah. "May the Lord remember and avenge." Zach.
Also interesting to note that Joash has Zechariah killed in the very place that Jehoiada said not to kill Athaliah.
I didn't catch that. Interesting.
What did
he
say?
Yes.
Catch what?
Say it again, Zach.
Okay, so Catherine pointed out that the place where Zechariah was killed, in the temple, Jehoiada, when Athaliah was calling out treason, said to take her out of the temple before she was killed.
Yeah, Jehoiada would not allow Athaliah to be killed in the temple. He had her removed, but Zechariah is killed.
Where they could have even grown up as like brothers when you think about it.
I know. So we're talking about some cold-hearted people here. People that would kill their grandchild. People that would kill the son of a beloved friend who had mentored them and taken care of them and basically was a surrogate father to him. And he kills his son. It's just... Philip made this point I don't remember if it was one of his sermons or one of the classes, but about the divided kingdom, how everything just got so messed up there in the divided kingdom. It's a very confusing time, but it's a very wicked time. There's some wicked things that have gone on, and it all starts when you allow yourself to drift away from the truth of God. I mean, you can say it started with David and Bathsheba, and then, because God said that he wouldn't take the kingdom away from Solomon, but it would come a time when it would be divided, and then Solomon's conduct, and then when the divided kingdom happened, and it's just a mess all the way down the line. So I digress. So verse 23 through 25. Elaine, could I get you to read that for us?
Are we still in 2 Chronicles?
Yes, 2 Chronicles 24, verses 23 through 25.
Came up against him, and they came to Judah and Jerusalem, destroyed all the officials of the people from among the people, and sent all their spoil to the king of Damascus. Indeed, the army of the Arameans came with a small number of men, yet the Lord delivered a very great army into their hands, because they had forsaken the Lord, the God of their fathers. Thus they executed judgment on Joash. Keep on.
Through 25.
When they had departed from him, for they left him very sick, his own servants conspired against him because of the blood of the son of Jehoiada the priest, and murdered him on his bed. So he died, and they buried him in the city of David, but they did not bury him in the tombs of the kings.
Okay. All right. They didn't bury him in the tombs of the kings. Because and in one other account it says because of what he had done. So this is what happens. God defeated Israel in this battle with just a small army of Arameans. It wasn't a big army at all. And I'm sure they were surprised that they had such a great victory. Did the Arameans really defeat them? Or was it God that defeated them? Based on this text here. It was God. God defeated them because of their sin, because of their idolatry. He defeated them. Okay. And so, Joash is dead. Now Amaziah is going to take his place as king. And so in chapter 25, we pick up there. And Elijah, would you like to read for us some?
Sure.
Okay, verse 1 through 4, if you would, of chapter 25, please.
Yeah. Amaziah was 25 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 29 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was
That's a hard one. Jehoadan or Jehoadan?
Yeah. Of Jerusalem. And he did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, yet not with a whole heart. And as soon as the royal power was firmly his, he killed his servants who had struck down the king, his father. To four? Is that right?
Through four.
Through four, okay. But he did not put their children to death according to what is written in the law in the book of Moses, where the Lord commanded. Fathers shall not die because of their children, nor children die because of their fathers, but each one shall die for his own sin.
Okay, thank you. All right, so Amaziah is going to be similar to Joash in this regard. They both start good. They out of the gate, they're both doing good things. But at some point, they both go south. And the same thing is going to happen here with Amaziah. But he starts out really good here. He kills the men who assassinated his father. But what does he not do that most kings in his position would have done?
He didn't kill their son.
Yeah, he didn't kill their children. A lot of times when a king came to power, if his father had been assassinated or he had enemies left over from his father's time in power, he would kill the opposition. And a lot of the kings in the Middle East and the Israelites did it too. They wouldn't just kill the men responsible. They'd kill them and their entire family. But it says here, in verse 4, however, he did not put their children to death, but did as is written in the law of the book of Moses, which the Lord commanded, saying, the fathers shall not be put to death for sons, nor sons be put to death for fathers, but each shall be put to death for his own sin. And that's from Deuteronomy 24:16. So he is observing the law here. That's good.
It's kind of ironic because he avenged his father's death as his father's son. You know, he did what was natural.
Yeah.
Yeah, he meant, you know, that's, but he didn't, you know, kill his enemy's son. So.
Yeah.
But I understand, but it just it's interesting that.
Yeah. Yeah. He kills the man that was responsible for killing his father, but he doesn't kill their children, which a lot of kings would have done. So he's observing the law in that regard as it relates to, you know, how to carry out justice and that kind of thing. So thought that was really, really interesting. Okay. Tristan, could I get you to read verses 5 through 13?
Yeah, the Second Chronicles 25 there.
Chapter 25. Yeah. Second Chronicles chapter 25.
Moreover, Amaziah gathered Judah together and set over them captains of thousands and captains of hundreds, according to their fathers' houses throughout all Judea and Benjamin. And he numbered them from 20 years old and above, and found them to be 300,000 choice men, able to go to war, who could handle a spear and a shield, and also hired 100,000 mighty men of valor from Israel for 100 talents of silver. But a man of God came to him, saying, O king, do not let the army of Israel go with you, for the Lord is not with Israel, not with any of the children of Ephraim. But if you go, be gone. Be strong in battle. Even so, God shall make you fall before the enemy, for God has power to help and to overthrow. Then Amaziah said to the man of God, But what shall we do about the 100 talents which I have given to the troops of Israel? And the man of God answered, The Lord is able to give me much more than this. So Amaziah discharged the troops and had come to him from Ephraim to go back home. Therefore their anger was greatly aroused against Judah, and they returned home in great anger. Then Amaziah strengthened himself, and leading his people, he went to the Valley of Salt and killed 10,000 of the people of Seir. Also, the children of Judah took captive 10,000 alive, brought them to the top of the rock, and cast them down from the top of the rock, so that they were dashed into pieces. But as for the soldiers of the army which Amaziah had discharged, so that they would not go with him into battle, they raided the cities of Judea from Samaria to Beth-Horon, killed 3,000 in them, and took much spoil.
Okay. All right. So what's going on here?
All kinds of stuff.
All kinds of stuff. That's right. Okay, what's the first thing? He numbers the people to see how many men for war he has. And he comes up with 300,000 choice men of war who can handle the spear and the shield in Judah and within the ranks of Judah and Benjamin. And then he hires some 100,000 more people. Where do they come from? They come from Israel, specifically Ephraim. And so God sends a man of God to Amaziah. And what does he say to him about these men that he's hired to go fight with him? Don't take them. You don't need them. If I'm in your corner, basically I'm paraphrasing. If I'm in your corner, you don't need them. Send them home. I don't want them going anyway because they're idolaters. I don't even want them involved here. Just send them back home. And so Amaziah says, he says to the man of God, but what about the 100 talents of silver that I gave them? What about that? And you recall what he says there in verse 9? What's his answer?
The Lord will give you much more than this.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. Don't worry about the 100 talents of silver. God Almighty owns all the silver on planet Earth. He can give you whatever He wants to give you. He can help you, and He can give you a lot more. Don't worry about the money. Just forget about the money. Just do what, if you want to have a victory, is basically what He's saying. If you want to have a victory, because He says there in verse 8, you know, that the Lord can bring down, or the Lord can help. So basically, what do you want? You want God to help you or want God to bring you down? If you take these men with you, you're going to have a defeat. If you tell them to go home and you let God fight in your corner, you're going to have a victory. And so he sends the men home, which was the right thing to do. So far he's doing good. He sends the men home, and he has the battle, and he has a great victory. He kills 10,000 in the battle itself. He captures 10,000 and brings them up to the top of a cliff and throws them off, and they're dashed to pieces. I mean, this is brutal stuff. This is some brutal stuff going on here. So they're dashed to pieces. But what about the men from Israel that he had sent back? What do they do in verse 13?
Everybody in the cities of Judah and Samaria.
Yeah, they're raiding the cities of Judah and Samaria. They're mad. They were evidently insulted. They felt disrespected by having been sent home. Now, I think if I had been in their position and I had been hired to go fight in a war and been paid to do it and then told, you can keep the money, just go on about college. Thank you.
That's great. I'm gone.
I would have been happy to do that.
Well, I think part of the motivation is the plunder they would get
exactly
from the war.
Yeah, exactly. They were expecting the plunder, the spoils of war, and willing, I guess, to take their chances in the battle, in hopes of getting their hands on the plunder. So it was that and some ego involved too. There's two couple of things going on here. So now they're doing these raids and attacking Judah. So let's start now with verse 14. Let's read 14. Let's see, where am I here? Yeah, 14 through 16. Olivia, can I get you to do that?
Sure. Now it was so after Amaziah came from the slaughter of the Edomites, that he brought the gods of the people of Seir up to set them up to be his gods, and bowed down before them, and burned incense to them. Therefore the anger of the Lord was aroused against Amaziah, and he sent him a prophet who said to him, why have you sought the gods of the people, which could not rescue their own people from your hand? So it was, as he talked with him, that the king said to him, have we made you the king's counselor? Seize, why should you be killed? Then the prophet seized and said, I know that God has determined to destroy you because you have done this and have not heeded my advice.
Okay, thank you. All right, so Amaziah's been doing great up till now. But this is one of those things that just makes your head spin around and around and around in circles. Like, what in the world is he thinking? What's he doing? So he brings the gods of the Edomites and sets them up and bows down to them and burns incense to them, after Jehovah God has just given him a victory. Just given him a victory. And he does this. This is just, it's crazy.
It reminds me of the children of Israel coming through the Red Sea with this great deliverance, and then not very long after making a golden calf and worshiping it.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Or the people of Jesus' day, who many of which were present and saw Jesus perform miracles and heard Jesus teach, and at the triumphal entry wanted to make him king, and a week later are yelling, crucify and crucify. People, human beings can be very fickle. Very, very fickle. It's just, you can't understand, you know, this. So God sends someone, a prophet, to him, and the prophet says, why have you sought the gods of the people who have not delivered their own people from your hand? What's he saying there?
Why are you trusting them when they didn't deliver their own people?
Yeah. The gods that you're bowing down to, the gods that you're burning incense to, those gods were not able to deliver their own people from your hand. And don't forget, I gave you the victory. Those gods weren't able to help them. Why are you bowing down to them? This is crazy. If they can't save them, they can't save you. So why are you bowing down to them? And so, rather than humbling himself and saying, "You're right. That was foolish. I will go get them right now and destroy them. Forgive me." Rather than saying that, he doubles down. Okay, verse 16 again. "And it came about, as he was walking with him, that the king said to him," to this prophet that God had sent, "Have we appointed you a royal counselor?" Just stop. I don't remember hiring you as a counselor. You just need to be quiet. Why should you be struck down? Then the prophet stopped and said one last thing. What was the last thing he said to him? "God's going to destroy you because you've done this and you have not listened to his counsel." It's very sad to me to see men who have the potential and have the opportunity to do so much good and start well, like Joash and Amaziah, and finish so poorly. Well, even Solomon. We could say the same thing about Solomon. It's very sad to see that. But the Kings and the Chronicles are here for us to see the fruit, the results of disobedience. When we get off track, we're going to run amok. Okay. Verse 17 through 19. Frank, can I come back to you again? 17 through 19.
"Now Amaziah, king of Judah, asked advice and sent to Joash, the son of Jehoash, the son of Jehu, king of Israel, saying, 'Come, let us face one another in battle.' And Joash, king of Israel, sent to Amaziah, king of Judah, saying, 'The thistle that was in Lebanon sent to the cedar that was in Lebanon, saying, Give your daughter to my son as wife. And a wild beast that was in Lebanon passed by and trampled the thistle. Indeed, you say that you have defeated the Edomites, and your heart is lifted up to boast. Stay at home now. Why should you meddle with trouble that you should follow, you and Judah with you?'"
Okay, thank you. All right, so a prophet of God has just told Amaziah, "God's going to destroy you because of your disobedience and because your refusal to listen to the good counsel that you've received from the prophet. God's going to destroy you." And having just heard that, he's willing to go into battle? I'd be afraid that this is where I'm going to get it. But he's puffed up. He's proud. He's arrogant. He may even be, I might be a little presumptuous to say this, but he's so puffed up, proud of himself, he may be starting to feel like some people do, "I don't need God." And so he picks a fight with Joash, king of Israel. Now, he has a somewhat of a reason to pick a fight, because these these troops that he had hired, this 100,000 men that he had hired to come help him in the battle, were raiding his territory. And he may have talked to Joash about it. Maybe Joash didn't do anything, but I don't know. But anyway, he's picking a fight with Joash. And Joash gives him a little proverb. And he says in verse 18, "The thorn bush which was in Lebanon sent to the cedar which was in Lebanon, saying, 'Give your daughter to my son in marriage.' But there passed by a wild beast that was in Lebanon and trampled the thorn bush." What's he saying there in that little parable? What's the point of it? What's Joash's point?
You're going to get trampled.
You're going to get trampled, but you're just a bush. Joash is kind of prideful too. He said, "I'm a cedar, and you're a bush. Yeah, you had a little victory, you know, over Aram. Don't let that go to your head. If you come out against me, you're going to get clobbered." And Amaziah wouldn't listen. He wouldn't listen. And so he does go out in battle against him. And so let's read verse 20 through the end of the chapter. Rick, could I get you to do that for us?
"But Amaziah would not listen, for it was from God that he might deliver them into the hand of Joash, because they had sought the gods of Edom. So Joash, king of Israel, went up, and he said to Amaziah, king of Judah," and he and Amaziah, king of Judah, faced each other at Beth Shemesh, which belonged to Judah. And Judah was defeated by Israel, and they fled each to his tent. Then Joash, king of Israel, captured Amaziah, king of Judah, the son of Joash, the son of Jehoahaz, at Beth Shemesh, and brought him to Jerusalem, and tore down the wall of Jerusalem from the gate of Ephraim to the corner gate, 400 cubits. And he took all the gold and silver and all the utensils which were found in the house of God with Obed-Edom, and the treasures of the king's house, the hostages also, and returned to Samaria. And Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, lived 15 years after the death of Joash, son of Jehoahaz, king of Israel. Now the rest of the acts of Amaziah, from the first to last, behold, are they not written in the book of the kings of Judah and Israel? And from that time, and from the time that Amaziah turned away from following the Lord, they conspired against him in Jerusalem, and he fled to Lachish, but they sent after him to Lachish and killed him there. Then they brought him on horses and buried him with his fathers in the city of Judah."
Okay, thank you. All right, so he refuses to listen to Joash's counsel. And he goes out and he meets him on the battlefield. And Judah defeats Israel. It's a significant, significant loss for Amaziah and for Israel. And Joash comes to Israel. And he tears down a long section of the wall, 400 cubits, which would be 600 feet. That's a long section of wall. Yes.
So
Judah defeated
Israel.
Did I? What did I say?
You're saying that Judah defeated
Israel. Israel defeated Judah. Thank you for straightening me out. I'll tell you, when I go through the Kings and Chronicles, I stay mixed up half the time.
Probably doesn't help that you just went over Joash to Judah.
There's two Joash, King Joash is one of Judah, one of Israel. There's two Jorams, one of each, and there's two Ahaziahs. So yeah, no wonder I'm confused, but thank you for straightening me out. So Joash, king of Israel, comes to Jerusalem and tears down 600 feet of the wall. And took the silver and the utensils from the house of the Lord, the treasures from the king's house, hostages, and then he went back to Samaria. That's what happens. That's the kind of thing that happens when you disobey God. Your house gets messed up, figuratively speaking. Your world gets turned upside down when you rebel against God. And so he is executed because of his conduct and because of the way he acted. He's executed, and they brought him on horses and buried him with his fathers in the city of Judah. So that's the end of Amaziah. That's two kings in one really quick class period. Any comments or questions? I didn't think we would get finished, but we went through it pretty quickly. Yes.
Well, just kind of a general observation that you made regarding how uncivilized the world was in many ways, not only Israel, but I'm guessing, you know, the Gentile nations, what's known as the nations throughout, were probably worse than Israel in many ways. And I was just thinking that Jesus Christ and Christianity generally, I think, has civilized the world in many ways.
Yes.
It's not that bad things aren't still happening, they are. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we see the same kind of slaughter of grandchildren, you know. Mm-hmm. I think people have more humanity and value human beings generally more than what, you know, we find here in these Old Testament records. Yeah.
I would absolutely agree with that up until from the time of Christ up until now. Now we'll see what happens going forward. You know, to the extent that people get further and further away from God, more and more of those types of atrocities would happen, I would think. Thank you.